With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got you covered with comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting, confident looks you can count on. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed timeless, innovative menswear to help you move through the day with confidence. With the new Ace line, looking effortlessly sophisticated this fall is easy and comfortable. Stock up on crazy cozy sweatpants, shorts, and sweatshirts that elevate your style. They even have blazers, if you're lucky enough to grab one while they're in stock. Mack Weldon balances classic pieces with updated details to keep you looking sharp, not flashy, just classic, always in style, and made with the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code MACK25.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune joins us once again for Parenting Afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
Afternoon at newstalk.com if you have any questions for Joanna. First question is this. My daughter is a wonderful and kind 10-year-old. She's the eldest of three. She's been diagnosed with dyslexia, which wasn't a surprise as I myself was diagnosed as dyslexic in primary school. This year, she is a new resource teacher. He highlighted that my daughter is very reluctant to answer questions of any type. He seems to think this is a processing issue that is causing this. My concern for some time is the fact that my daughter is extremely shy and awkward in social situations. She's fantastic at putting herself out there and attends many after-school activities such as dance, gymnastics, team sports like camogie. However, she doesn't appear to interact with the other girls in the group. I can see she does her own thing and interacts when she has to, like during a match. But the second it's over and I'm there to pick her up, she walks straight over to me with her head down, not talking to any of the other girls. Her class teacher shares my concern. She's definitely inherited this shyness and awkwardness from myself, and I hated being this way growing up and still struggle with it to this day. In recent months, she started sleeping in our bed, coming into us in the middle of the night saying she can't sleep and doesn't know why. She denies any nightmares, but up until this point, she's always been a fantastic sleeper and always a very independent child. Is there anything else I could be doing to help my daughter? It breaks my heart that she doesn't have more friends, that she's such a fantastic little girl. I'm reluctant to talk too much to her about it. I don't want her to feel like there's something wrong with her. I vividly remember being called a loner at school and I hated it.
This is one of those, Sean, where, you know, having that shared experience with your child, which can really be a strength because it allows us to empathize and understand with what's going on. Actually, it might be having the opposite effect here. And this little girl's apparent struggles might be activating unresolved struggles in the parent.
Yeah, absolutely. Because she does mention her.
It's bringing up for you, oh my gosh, I remember being this child. And it feels raw when this parent is talking about themselves and it feels unprocessed. The other thing, speaking of processing, that jumps out is the resource teacher's observation that it might be a processing issue. That's quite vague. So I would be going back. Now, the resource teacher, it might be vague for us, if you know what I mean.
What does
the
processing issue even mean?
Exactly. So what I, in this context, would read it as, is it a language processing issue that the resource teacher is wondering about? And people who have language processing disorder, for example, which is a diagnosis, but if you have language processing disorder, you have normal hearing, but you might struggle to process what you're hearing. So you're hearing it, but that process, not making sense of it, if I could put it that way. It would be problems understanding spoken language, but it would also, or could also, be a problem in expressing your thoughts verbally. So some people will struggle in one of those, that they can express their thoughts, but understanding the information that's given to them is tricky, or vice versa. And some people have struggles in both areas. And if that was the case, Sean, and this is really interesting, because if this little girl did have some kind of a language processing, in groups like the after school activities, where there's groups of people, they're all talking at once, there's a lot of quick fire conversation, and you have a language processing challenge, that's going to make you want to hold back, opt out, because that would be very overwhelming.
Yes, of course.
And you would struggle hugely to understand what's happening and quick fire respond and participate actively in the conversation. That would be difficult. So I'm just putting that out there, that if somebody on her educational team has said, I think there might be a processing issue, maybe go back and explore that in some more detail. If this is something you need to look into further, it's usually a speech and language assessment. So a speech and language therapist would do that. So you're probably going to your local primary care, getting a referral there, asking them up front how long the wait is. And if it's waitable, great. And if not, you're looking at private speech and language therapy. So always get a recommendation. Either get a recommendation from somebody in primary care or through your GP, or go to a register of registered pediatric speech and language therapists. That's one option. I do think beyond this, like, when she's waking up in the middle of the night, she could also be carrying a lot that she hasn't worked through during the day if the stimulus is off for her. So that could be actually keeping her brain too active at night to keep her asleep. She denies nightmares. I would believe her. Why not? I mean, it doesn't have to be nightmares that would wake us. It could be uh-oh feelings. It could be some anxiety. So in terms of what can you do to help beyond that, and I would go back and clarify the processing piece, as I said, some play therapy could help. It could help with confidence, self-regulation. We're not saying shyness is an issue that requires therapy, because it doesn't, Sean. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with being shy. It's when the shyness, and if it is in fact shyness, there's some awkwardness here as a result. It is affecting this little girl's ability or capacity to fully engage with teachers, answer questions, represent herself, have social connections with her peers in after-school activities. It's those pieces. So if you feel she would benefit from self-esteem strengthening and enhancing and going into the confidence, some play therapy could be very helpful, because she doesn't have to talk in it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if it's a processing issue, where do they go to get a diagnosis of that?
So it would definitely be speech and language.
Yeah.
And then it would be a speech and language protocol. You know, they would put a plan in place around supporting and helping her with that. And a bit like anything, it would enable her to get adequate resources in school that would help her with any area that she needs to.
Yeah. Okay. Because it sounds like, I don't know, this is a terrible, like a, almost like a radio delay, that the message lands kind of a couple of seconds later,
like,
with her than it would with the other kids.
You can imagine that all these words are coming to you at once and they feel jumbled up. They're not coming to you in a kind of way that you can go, oh, I know what you've asked me and I can give you back that answer. Because it's hard to understand when you do it. It's easy. If someone's listening and they know someone who doesn't do it, they'll get the struggle. But when you do it automatically, it's hard to get your head around it.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit like, you could, with people who struggle with expressive language, it's not that they don't know the answer or what they want to say. It's just getting the words out in the right order to say it.
And can that be associated with dyslexia?
I mean, you can have comorbidity with any condition. You know, you can have ASD and dyslexia. You can have ASD and ADHD. You can have ADHD and speech and language. Everything can coexist.
Yeah.
So it's entirely possible that you can be dyslexic and have a processing issue. But it's not necessarily that one equates the other.
Right. I'm desperate for some advice regarding my 7-year-old daughter. She's the second oldest in a family of 5 girls, all very close in age, from 8 to 3.
Wow.
Our second daughter has always been a handful from the minute she could move. I treat all my girls the same, have no favourites. However, my second has this selfish, self-entitled trait that I'm fully allergic to. I can honestly say myself and my husband are not like this. We're happy-go-lucky. For example, our 3 oldest girls are the same size in clothes. Recently, I did a clothes shop and decided she wanted to wear some of the new clothes afterwards. Her older sisters weren't bothered wearing theirs. But sometime later, we were going out somewhere and I said to the other two, why not pick something from the new batch of clothes? And she went absolutely ballistic that she didn't get to wear their clothes first too. The tantrum was off the wall to the point it upset the whole house. We might get takeaway and she will analyse if someone got more chips or a bigger slice of pizza. She'll then say something like, you gave her more because you love her more. I understand she can't regulate her emotions at this age. My husband thinks we should discipline her by not letting her go to places like the cinema or swimming if her behaviour isn't acceptable. But I'm not inclined to do this. I want my children to get on and be close like I am with my siblings. It upsets me because I don't know where I went wrong. Do I need her to see someone? My husband says she'll grow out of it, but I'm afraid she will end up being a tearaway and be left out. Okay.
There's a lot here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think big part of the issue, first of all, very busy house.
Yeah.
There's five girls between 3 and 8. That's one a year. So,
yeah.
You know, they are on top of each other and nipping at each other's developmental heels. They're all in the same developmental zone, at least the top end of them. Do you know? So that it's hard to get space if you're in that sibling group to be yourself, to assert yourself. And as parents, it's hard not to treat them like a pack.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is really what this parent is saying. You know, this they're a group, they're this, I want them her with her sisters. They're all pooling the same new clothes. It's all, and I mean, in lots of ways, of course, you've got three kids wearing the same size clothes. I mean, I hear it.
Yes.
It makes total parental sense. It makes absolute parental sense. Unless you're one of those kids.
Yeah.
Unless you're the kid who does mind, who wants her own stuff, who wants to be her own person, who doesn't want to be treated as part of the pack. And if you treat me as part of the pack, you better believe it, I'm going to be the alpha of the pack.
Mm.
And I'm going to assert myself as the alpha of the pack, because that's how I perceive I will be seen, I will be heard, I will be understood, is by standing out and above the others.
Yeah.
So I think you've got quite a competitiveness. Like the language here about her being selfish and self-entitled, I mean, I'm not sure about that. They might be traits of these things, but I actually think there's a little bit more going on. I think she's struggling. And I do think, you know, when you say I treat, first of all, as parents, and I grew up in a five sibling group too, when you say I treat everyone the same, stop it. You do not. You absolutely do not. I mean, ask any big sibling group to describe their parents and you'd swear they were raised by different people.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's not true. And it's okay that it's not true, but we have to stop saying it's true and we have to stop telling our kids it's true. You can love them all. I don't think that's in dispute.
Yeah.
You know, you can, of course, love your children. But to say you've no favourites, I'm also going to give you that. That's fair.
Okay. Well, you also treat them differently in terms of how tired you are.
Exactly.
The more you go along,
how many
the more
resources
knackered
you have. And connection is not the same, because there's going to be, in your kids you're raising, because they're not a pack, they're individuals, there's going to be one or two of them that you just click with. You have similar traits. You find them easier to parent.
Mm.
That connection looks and sounds and feels differently to the one you have to dig a little deeper, because they're a little bit more work for you. But we just have to be honest about that. It's equity over equality. And in this family, you've got four of your five girls who are actually doing fine. Great job. And you've got one who is the one who needs a little bit more.
Mm.
And her little bit more probably sounds a lot more compared to very amenable, compliant, biddable siblings. Okay. So I do think if she's looking for a bit more, try to look. And I mean, you have five kids in 5 years.
Yeah.
Try to look at ways that you can have moments of meeting with her. Like not a big day out, but just taking her with you when you're doing the shopping and she can help with the grocery shopping, putting another of them in the car when you're going through the car wash and having one on one time there. Looking at how you can kind of be creative with your existing packed schedule to have those moments of meeting with them as individuals. I think that would really help here. I do think she needs more of her parents to herself. That little bit there, I think that's very relatable. You know, you get the takeaway and she got more chips. And even if you count out the chips, if you go down that lunacy route of I'm counting out the chips, one of them's going to say the chip is bigger than the other chip.
Yeah,
so there's no winning on that. But really what she's saying with that is I have to be hypervigilant to make sure I'm getting enough. I'm getting that you do feel the same about me. And those moments when you're like, when kids say, you know, you gave her more chips than me and you're frustrated, let's be honest. You're like, oh, you know, you want to, they feel that from us, Sean. So this little girl also knows that you feel frustrated with her and you might get irritated with her and you might want to roll your eyes at some of the stuff she's going on with. And all that's going to do is serve to make her go, I knew it. I knew you treated me differently than the others and now I'm right. So you're going to have to meet her where she's at and just find a common interest with her, something you can connect on, and just see if there's little opportunities to spend even 15, 20 extra minutes with her one-on-one. Like kids can do a lot with a little.
Yeah. And this isn't real because the parents or people listening might think, well, you're just rewarding bad behavior
No. See, I don't buy into that either, because I don't, like, children aren't showing us difficult behavior because they're trying to be difficult. They're trying to let us know they're having a difficulty.
Yeah.
So if we just respond to behavior like you know, we'll discipline her out of this. No, you won't. You'll entrench the behaviour. She'll dig deeper because all it's going to serve is to say, I knew it. I knew you treated me differently. Now you won't let me go to the cinema with the others. Now you won't let me do this. I knew it. And she's going to live up to that role that she's being assigned in the family. You have to be careful in sibling groups that are structured like this, that somebody isn't inadvertently scapegoated
as the issue in the
family, because it enables everyone else to look great when one person's carrying the family symptom. So really you're trying to integrate her, and you integrate her not by isolating her.
There may be a danger then that even if you now, and how much time do they have to do this, but if you give her a little bit more, the others might go, giving her more for.
By the sounds of it, though, they might not.
Yeah, they might not notice.
And I think also it is okay to say to them, I wish I could do every single day, give you all this. But what I'm trying to do is that at least once a week, I spend time with all of you individually, because it's hard. And just acknowledge them. It's hard because there's so many of us in our family. And I think we do a really great job at being a big family. But sometimes you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah. I'm writing this as a very tired mother of two wonderful little boys, 3.5 and 17 months. Our eldest is the epitome of calm, and our youngest is a lot more fiery and definitely keeps us on our toes. Our youngest fills every room he enters with an I have arrived kind of energy and plays a lot on the reaction of other people. He's cute, smiley, mischievous, which we adore, but also try not to turn into a thing so that it becomes something for him to live up to in the future. Our household is calm. Both my husband and I don't tend to raise our voices or shout. We've always known that our youngest has a temper. Now, when he blows up, we try to give him space and teach him to hit something like a pillow or a cushion. Instead, his brother or us, but of course, he's still at the very early learning stages of this. Lately, he started waking up in the middle of the night in an absolute state of rage like I've never seen before. And last night was the worst one yet. It's difficult to explain, but he's so angry that I'm struggling to even pick him up or carry him out of the room. If he gets his hands on something, he'll throw it across the room to demonstrate how angry he is. He'll headbutt me, the wall or the door, if I try to touch him. He tenses up like a log. His face turns bright red and he is angry, not upset. My gut tells me that he has no behavioural issues. I'm just trying to understand and figure out if there's anything else I can do to help him navigate or prevent this. If it's relevant, the time before last, he seemed angry because he woke up and the light was on in the hall. He likes sleeping in darkness. Any help on how best support him?
I mean, there's a lot here. He's really young and he's very much developmentally in that stage of behaviour is my language, and he's doing it quite effectively, arguably. And the whole, you know, you're trying to give him space when he's upset and show him how to hit a cushion. He's too young for that, Sean. Like, he's only 17 months. He's not at an age of reason and rationalisation. Mm. So really what you've got to do there is, when we talk about giving our kids space, we still have to be around them. He might not be in the place now. Don't come down to the eye level of an angry toddler when they're in that rage, or you'll put yourself at the perfect height for a slap. But, you know, you want to kind of get a hand on him as soon as you can, because you're going to be the calm for him. He's not going to soothe himself or calm himself down. So you've got to, you know, and in order to be the calm for our children, we also have to check in and go, how calm am I feeling right now? And be honest about that. Tag each other in and out to deal with it. But he needs to be held, to be comforted, and to be distracted and redirected. That's really your language when they're that age. These nighttime rages are really interesting to me. And I suppose I'm asking this parent, are you sure he's definitely awake when that's going on?
Ah, yeah, that's interesting.
Because it's really like he's waking up, he's thrashing, he's kicking, he's headbutting, he's highly dysregulated and heightened. And I'm just wondering, could it be a little bit of night terror stuff going on there? I'd keep an eye on it. And if you know, track a pattern. Is he definitely awake? They don't mention how he comes out of it. That's the piece we're missing here. So I'm not sure, you know, does he snap out of it?
That's interesting, because she said that the light being off was... he liked it. The light was on.
He likes the dark. Yeah. But you know when somebody wakes up in a rage, everything is a problem?
Yeah.
It's the light, it's the curtain, it's the sound, it's the duvet, it's you.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's always everything. So keep an eye on that. The other thing that jumps out at me because of his age, might he be teething? And getting those really tricky back teeth. And could he be in pain?
Because
that would wake him suddenly. And it would be a real sensory shock kind of wake. So it could compel him into it. Screaming, I'm really in pain. I can't make sense of it. Because when he wakes up, he's still tired. he sounds scared and confused. Mm. And I know this parent is saying, my gut says it's not behavioural issues. I mean, look, he's 17 months. We're not even thinking about that. But when a child that age wakes up and they're tired and confused and disoriented, that's going to look like rage.
Yeah.
Everything's going to come out as rage because that, you know, the sad mad, they're just like everything is angry because they can't make sense of it. So I would say overall at 17 months, generally speaking, and if there's no other considerations developmentally in the mix, anger outbursts like this are quite typical at his age. They come from a combination of children this age desiring independence, but actually being entirely dependent. So they get really frustrated. They have limited communication skills. So they rely on their behavior because they don't feel understood. They get mad. So his frustration threshold is really low. I would be saying you got spoiled on your first child. And actually, this is quite normal. Just let it run its course. I mean, look, if there's more, I'm always aware we get a snippet in a letter, you know, there's more and there's a different kind of pattern emerges around this, I'd link in with your public health nurse and just have a little developmental chat because they might be able to put more context on. I mean, he's coming up to a developmental check anyway in the next couple of months. So you could make sure you get that appointment and it would be no harm if only to reassure you and maybe get some pointers on how best to redirect him when he's like that. But it sounds quite developmental.
If it is night terrors, and I know this is how long is a piece of string, typically speaking, do children just grow out of them?
They do.
What tends to happen?
They do, but it can take quite a while. And he'd be quite young for them. I do want to say that, you know, so I'm putting it out as a question. Now, he'd be quite young, but it's not unheard of either.
Yeah.
Kind of that 3.5-ish is a typical age for them, actually.
but they're going, what?
And actually, no, I mean, as in that's when they peak.
Oh, sorry,
It actually could be closer to 7.
Yeah.
Some children, it's even 10. Now, it's not an every night thing. That's what also made me wonder about teething. Like, you wouldn't be getting them every night, or hopefully you wouldn't be getting them every night. And again, I would want just to have a chat with your public health nurse or your GP about that, if that's what you do think it is. And they might be able to provide you with some guidance around it. But if these parents might be listening, go, no, he's definitely awake, like he's fully in the moment, because someone in a night terror can look awake.
Yeah.
But they have no recollection afterwards that it happened.
Oh, right.
You know, they could be wandering around the house shouting and the next morning you go, gosh, that was a rough night. And they're like, what are you talking about? No recollection of it.
And you won't be able to have that conversation with a 17-month-old, really.
Not at all. No. So you're trying to get your, again, they're trying, you know, he's thrashing and he's very worked up. Rule out pain, first and foremost, because that's going to be so dysregulating and he can't tell you, I'm in pain. Yeah. So you're going to have to do a process of elimination. And then you're trying to get him into your arms so you can hold him, rock him, sway, using rhythm and synchrony to try bring that calm back in for him and help get him back to sleep and resettle him. Even with a night terror, that's what you're trying to do, by the way, is, you know, get them out of the night terror into the now moment and then resettle them back to sleep. And the brain thinks, oh, we've woken up and it's a reset.
Yeah. Okay. Fingers crossed for teething then. I would have thought.
Absolutely.
Joanna, thanks
a
million as ever. Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got you covered with comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting, confident looks you can count on. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed timeless, innovative menswear to help you move through the day with confidence. With the new Ace line, looking effortlessly sophisticated this fall is easy and comfortable. Stock up on crazy cozy sweatpants, shorts, and sweatshirts that elevate your style. They even have blazers, if you're lucky enough to grab one while they're in stock. Mack Weldon balances classic pieces with updated details to keep you looking sharp. Not flashy, just classic, always in style, and made with the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code MACK25.